This is My Daddy Station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
Lights out on the hour. It is the hour of the time. Lights out for the curfew of your body, soul, and mind.
You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon or good evening, as the case may be, wherever you're at. How many of you have read the new warning label on toothpaste lately? If not, you might be surprised. Now, you may not have one of the new toothpaste tubes yet. You see, these warning labels, these new warning labels that are required by the Food and Drug Administration on all fluoride toothpaste and dental care products is not required unless they were shipped as of or after April the 7th of 1997. So there's still a lot of old tubes of toothpaste and dental care products that have fluoride as an ingredient out there on the shelf, and that's what you may have still in your bathroom. But eventually this will catch up to you. And as soon as you get one of the toothpastes or dental care products that contain fluoride that was shipped after April the 7th, 1997, then you're going to find a new label. And basically what it says is that it's poison. Folks, you know, there's a lot of people who have been trying to tell us for many years, and I've done broadcasts on it in the early days of the Hour of the Time, probably right around 4.5 years ago, on fluoride and the effects of fluoride, and had some experts on who told us the truth about fluoride. That was a long time ago. But there have been people trying to tell us this since literally before I was born, ladies and gentlemen, trying to warn us about the dangers of fluoride. Now, I'm 54 years old. And all of these people over all of these years have been called lunatics, nuts, wackos, crazies. Fluoride is not dangerous. Fluoride is not poisonous. Fluoride cannot hurt you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the truth comes out. Fluoride is poison. not only can it kill you if you take enough of it, but small children are especially susceptible to the poisonous effects of fluoride. It can also destroy your teeth by causing something called fluorosis, which discolors the teeth, puts layers of fluoride in the teeth that cause the teeth in later years when pressure is exerted to crack and literally come apart in your mouth. And, you know, they're just now beginning to admit this after how many generations have been brushing their teeth with fluoride, how many generations have gone to their dentist and had fluoride treatments, how many cities have put fluoride in their water reservoirs. This is really serious stuff, folks. You know what it says on the label now in small print? It says, quote, if you accidentally swallow more than used for brushing, seek professional help or contact a poison control center immediately. Immediately! Oh, wow! What's going on, folks? Why? Well, it's because everything that all these crazy, lunatic, nutty people have been trying to tell you all these years is really true. It's really true. Under the association seal of approval on the labels before, they used to say, quote, don't swallow. Use only a pea-sized amount for children under six, and children under six should be supervised while brushing with any toothpaste to prevent swallowing, end quote. Well, the truth is, little children do swallow, ladies and gentlemen. And this stuff is bad. And there are two other ingredients in toothpaste that are bad. Sorbitol, which is a liquid that keeps toothpaste from drying out. That's a laxative that could cause diarrhea in children. Or sodium lauryl sulfate, which is an ingredient that makes toothpaste foam. And that can also be diuretic. But the fluoride poses the most danger to children if swallowed, particularly to younger children. You see, fluoride is a drug. And before it was used as an ingredient in dental care products, it was a rat poison. It was sold as rat poison and contained the skull and bones. And the fluoride that is sent to the labs to be mixed in toothpaste as it is being manufactured is in a bottle that contains the skull and crossbones and is clearly marked poison. How about that? It's a drug. Even though it's an over-the-counter drug, we're altering the body when we brush our teeth with a fluoride toothpaste, our tooth gel, folks. And you have to understand that. You're adding something in your body that actually gets into your bones and in your teeth and can cause you terrible problems. And for children, it can actually kill them in the right amount. You see, children aren't yet in control of their swallowing reflex. And children 4 to 6 years old typically swallow toothpaste when brushing. It's not unusual. And that's why it's recommended that children get only a pea-sized amount of toothpaste, because most of that goes down their throats. And a 1995 study at the Medical College of Georgia School of Dentistry found that about half the children this age don't spit out or rinse out. They just swallow the toothpaste instead. Making matters worse, they tend to use too much toothpaste on their own, especially when they use flavored children's toothpaste, folks. Now, toothpaste, listen to this. This just blows my mind because all these years, the American Dental Association and the United States government, the Food and Drug Administration, and the American Medical Association have been telling us that fluoride is safe, that it cannot possibly hurt you, that it's okay to brush your teeth with it, it's okay to put it in the water supply. In fact, they encourage cities and communities to do that. They encouraged people to brush their teeth with fluoride toothpaste and go down and get fluoride treatments when you go to your dentist. But fluoride is dangerous, folks. It can cause a condition known as fluorosis that discolors or spots developing teeth. Research conducted by the School of Dental Medicine at the University of Connecticut Health Center concluded that brushing with more than a pea-sized amount of toothpaste more than once daily contributed to most of the fluorosis cases it observed in young children. Now listen to me carefully. Most of you are teaching your children to brush after every meal. You're putting a big, long strip of toothpaste on that toothbrush. And plus your water supply is fluoridated. Listen to me carefully. You've got to stop this. Listen to me carefully. Research conducted by the School of Dental Medicine at the University of Connecticut Health Center concluded, listen, folks, listen very carefully, concluded that brushing with more than a pea-size amount of toothpaste more than once daily contributed to most of the fluorosis cases it observed in young children. And in areas where the drinking water contains fluoride, children who swallow even the pea-size amount of toothpaste can be poisoned by fluoride, and their teeth can be forever and irreversibly ruined because fluorosis cannot be reversed. It can't be changed. The teeth become horribly discolored. And in the veins where the fluoride has lodged, where this fluorosis has occurred, eventually, if pressure is applied to the tooth, such as you go to bite an ice cube or you accidentally get a piece of the bone when you're chewing on a rib, it can cause the entire tooth to just literally disintegrate in your mouth. It just cracks and falls apart. So, you know, I don't know what it is that makes people disregard scientific fact and disregard the warnings that people give for years and years and years. And you see, just because some organization has a name that says American Dental Association doesn't make them right, ladies and gentlemen. Just because it has a name, Food and Drug Administration, doesn't make them right. These are headed by political appointees whose campaigns are financed by large corporations. Well, some of the largest corporations are the ones that manufacture aluminum. The byproduct from the manufacture of aluminum is fluoride. In the early days, they didn't know what to do with it. They had so much of it, they didn't know what to do with it. The only thing it was good for was rat poison. So they sold it as rat poison, but nobody needed that much rat poison, so they tried to get rid of it. They tried to dump it in water, and people wouldn't let them dump it in water because it was poison. And they tried to dig holes in the ground and dump it there, and people wouldn't let them do that because it's poison. So they had to figure out a way to get rid of this stuff. And you know what they figured out? They figured out, hey, let's sell it to people and put it in toothpaste and dental products, and we'll make this other big industry, and we won't have to get rid of it. They'll come and pay us to haul it away. Now, folks, you know, that may be a little bit of an exaggeration, or it may not be, because corporations have been known to do things much worse than that. Don't go away. I shall return right after this briefest of pauses. This is the Hour of the Time, and I'm William Cooper. Oh, I meant to tell you and forgot, folks. Last night you did not hear the rerun of the Hour of the Time because the tape machine in the studio ate the tape. Just literally ate the tape. So we had nothing to give you. And we had no other reruns here. We had no past reruns here. They're all with Annie in her office because she has to have the masters to make tapes when people order copies. So we had nothing here to give you for the Hour of the Time, and so we did music until it got to me. You know, I was very upset that we were unable to air the rerun of the Hour of the Time at the normal time of 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern. And so at around half past the hour, we went off the satellite to save some money and just resumed our regular local programming here in the Round Valley. So anyway, that's what happened last night. If you were listening for the Hour of the Time and you did not hear it at its normal rerun time. You're listening to the most dangerous radio host in America, that from a White House memo. And the label is from William Jefferson Clinton himself. What a feather in my cap. I've got to tell you, he couldn't have done more to help the ratings and the listenership of this broadcast than to say something like that. I wonder what gets into these people. You know, if I was him, I would never have said that. But he did, and I'm glad that he did, because it's true. The truth is the most terrible enemy to people who can't tell the truth. And that certainly fits this current administration. Riverside, California, July 29th, 1997. I've actually had this since July 29th, which was just a couple of days ago, folks. Three, I believe. Didn't get a chance to get it on the air for you until now. An Air National Guard helicopter pilot who witnessed the explosion of TWA Flight 800 believes the jetliner was downed by an explosive projectile, the Press Enterprise newspaper reported Tuesday. This is copyright 1997, the Press Enterprise, and where is that? It's also came off the Associated Press. The guy's name is Frederick C. Meyer. He's one of two helicopter pilots who was watching TWA Flight 800 and saw it explode. And he said he doesn't know what the projectile was or where it came from, but he said he saw an ordnance explosion near the plane. He was a Vietnam War helicopter pilot. He's seen these things in the air many, many times. And the reason he's coming forward is because he doesn't like the fact that the government's not telling the truth. He said he saw it. He saw it. He says he knows what he saw, and he saw an ordnance explosion. And he told the Riverside, I guess that's Riverside, California, the Riverside newspaper, and whatever I saw, the explosion of the fuel was not the initiator of the event. It was one of the results. Something happened before that which was the initiator of the disaster. I saw an ordnance explosion. Now, for those of you who don't know what an ordnance explosion is, it can only come from like an artillery shell, a missile, a hand grenade, some kind of bomb, but he said it exploded outside the airplane, ladies and gentlemen. And we know that what brought down Flight 800 was a missile. That's already been proven, but the government continues to deny it. There was at least 150 people who were credible witnesses who saw it. And if you want to count the ones who may not be so credible or may not be so sure of what they saw, there's at least 300. And if you want to really cull it out down to the very nitty-gritty, you can get down to 50 whose testimony could not be impeached in a million years. All say they saw a missile shoot up from the ocean and hit that plane. And there's more proof than that, but that's not what this broadcast today is all about. Also, I found another source for something I told you years ago, ladies and gentlemen, that the Central Intelligence Agency and the intelligence community as a whole in this country is controlled by the secret societies. And this is from Secret Agenda by Jim Hugan, Random House, copyright 1984. And this appears on page 48 and 49. I'm going to read it to you verbatim. And it's, quote, "My source said that the notes had been written by analysts assigned to the CIA's Office of Medical Services and Office of Security. Their concern, indeed, what seems to have been their panic, stemmed from the fact that Fitzgerald, the talented author of Fire in the Lake, was the daughter of the late Desmond Fitzgerald, a former deputy director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Indeed, Des Fitzgerald was a legendary figure within the agency and one of the original Knights Templar." End quote. It goes on to talk about him, and then there's footnotes about the Knights Templar the CIA officers who were close to William Donovan. And William Donovan, when he created the OSS, which was the forerunner to the Central Intelligence Agency, and of course all this was carried into the new agencies when they were created, surrounded himself and would only take in those members of a secret society known as the Knights Templar. that's well known amongst researchers who research the OSS, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Office of Naval Intelligence, and others. And, of course, the American public really doesn't know anything about this kind of stuff. When I made that allegation years ago, after having been a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence and revealing the way that I was selected for the Office of Naval Intelligence, and that there was no one, and I mean absolutely no one, who was in the Office of Naval Intelligence or the intelligence community that I knew of at the time that I was attached to the Office of Naval Intelligence, who was not a highly degreed Freemason, a member of the Rosicrucii, the Knights Templar, and many others. There were also a lot of people heavily recruited from Brigham Young University, which is a Mormon university in the state of Utah. And when I asked about this, they told me that the Mormons were very good at keeping secrets and were well disciplined and would never question their orders. I don't know how true that is, folks, but I do know that the intelligence community has been from its very beginning, controlled by these secret societies, fraternal organizations, and in particular, the Knights Templar. If you don't believe that, I just gave you one source. There are a lot of other sources that I've given you in the past which confirm that. Everybody who has investigated the OSS and Wild Bill Donovan, who is the old man, the senior person within the intelligence community, he's gone now, but he's the one who set it all up. He's the one who made it work in the modern era anyway. And he began the whole thing by recruiting only those Knights Templars and surrounding himself with Knights Templars. The strange thing about it is that he himself was a Catholic, and the Knights Templars have sworn revenge against the Vatican, the Catholic Church, because the Pope and the King of France way back in 1307 moved against the Templars and literally destroyed their order in France and forced them to go underground in Europe and in the other places of the world where they existed. And then they became an extremely subversive group existing within the framework and the fabric of the other so-called fraternal orders, the mystery schools, and the secret societies ever since. So, there you have that. For whatever it's worth, and it's only worth it, if you're trying to find out what's really going on and who's doing it and why and what it means, and or if you're just researching these subjects, or if you just have an interest in it. I've had a lot of letters from people telling me that they don't want to hear this kind of stuff because it doesn't mean anything. those are sheeple talking when I hear that. Well, I guess everybody has recovered sufficiently from the conference, those who attended, and should be home now. And we're getting ready for our Groom Lake excursion. I don't know if there's any places left open or not. We sent out a huge mailing to all of the members of our organizations and associates and people who have asked to be on our mailing list. And we know that as soon as those letters get into their hands, there will be no spots left at all. In fact, I hated to make that mailing because I might have to make two or three Groom Lake trips because of it. But that's, that's neither here nor there. If you're a member of the radio listening audience and you want to make sure that that you get in on this excursion to Area 51, also known as Groom Dry Lake, the place in the Nevada desert where strange things appear in the sky, owned and operated, tested by the United States government. And, I videotaped these things, photographed them for many, many years. I was the one who let the world know the exact location of this place, and have been taking people there once a year for quite a while. So if you want to make sure that you're on this trip, send your fee, folks, overnight. You better do it overnight at this point. You can't depend upon the regular mail to get it here in time anymore. Better send it overnight. Make your check or money order payable to Harvest Trust and send it to the Harvest Trust, P.O. Box 2470, Pine Top, Arizona, 8535. That's Harvest Trust, P.O. Box 2470, Pine Top, Arizona, 85935. I'm going to open the phones now and see what you guys are up to out there. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about. I don't care. I've been extremely busy lately. As you know, maybe you don't know, but some of you know, we're completely revamping our organizations. We're doing an awful lot of other things, doing a lot of preparations for this Groom Lake trip. I'm working on about three books concurrently and simultaneously, and trying to make the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network viable and successful. And that's a big job, folks. I don't know how many of you realize that most of this stuff I'm doing by myself. Of course, I get a lot of help from Connie, who comes in from 9 in the morning until 1 p.m., and, of course, Annie does all the shipping and handling and that kind of stuff. But most of the projects that we do around here, I do. I run the radio station. I run the network. I run the organizations. I do all the research. I write the books and the articles. And thank goodness we've got some help now on Veritas. Veritas is going to press very shortly. In fact, it's almost at the paste-up stage. So you shouldn't be waiting for your copy of Veritas too much longer. And I want to thank all of you who have been waiting patiently for your patience and for your understanding. It's just, you know, we do around here what everybody else, with one or two people, what everybody else in the country takes millions of dollars and hundreds of people to do. For instance, we produce a full-size national newspaper, Veritas, with two people. Literally, two people. And the New York Times does the same thing with millions of dollars and hundreds of people. Well, we don't have millions of dollars. We don't even have thousands of dollars. In fact, most of the time, we don't even have hundreds of dollars. And sometimes, we don't even have tens of dollars. And we get it done with two people. So, you know, that's just what you have to understand about the things that we do. Somebody recently said the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network was not professional. No truer statement could have ever been spoken, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not a radio person. Don't have the slightest idea how to run a radio network, but we're doing it. I didn't know how to write a book or get it published, but I did it. I didn't know how to put a newspaper together and make it work and get it distributed around the country, but we did it. And we didn't know how to have a radio show. Didn't even know you could get on satellite, but we did that. We didn't know that we could create a network or how to do it or anything else, but we're doing it, and we're learning as we go along, and we make a success of it. I just thought it was so funny when we were accused of not being professional. Well, of course we're not professional. The definition of professional is something that you know so well that you can make your living at it, and people come to you just for that, you know, because, and you know, we don't know anything about it, and we're just struggling along, so just want to let you know that that we know we're not professional. Ah, boy, I'll tell you. You know, people, we're doing more than, in fact, we're doing thousands of times more than most of the people in the nation ever even began to even think that they could possibly do. And people want us to be perfect. That just amazes me, folks. Anyway, if you want to call in, the number is 520-333-4578. And let's hear what you're thinking about, what you got to say, what you're doing, what you're concerned about. Maybe you know something that's happening that I don't know about that you might want to talk about or alert people to. And if you want to do that, that's fine. The number is 520-333-4578. We're still having our monsoons here. It's wonderful. It's just wet, if you know what I mean. And I love it. It's great. But every once in a while, you're going to hear a little rumble in the background. That's a thunderstorm just sort of drifting by in the valley. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. It's Ron out here in California.
Hi, Ron. I'm still laughing from your presentation at the conference. You did a great job.
Oh, thanks for that. The audience was very gracious that they let me do that, and it was my first time, frankly, to ever do anything like that.
You did a great job, and when you talked about how fast the rockets go after they're launched and they're going up through the atmosphere, and that the thermal layer starts at around 300 miles, and they're going through this thermal layer at about 25,000 miles per hour, and then you made reference to the Bessemer steel process in the back of the book. I almost fell out of my chair.
Yeah, that's funny. But, you know, see, these are all facts that are in books.